Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, everyone. Thank you for joining me. I am Denise Bowles, and you're here on Birth While Black. Tonight, we're having an amazing show right at the crux of the very beginning of World Doula Week begins. We're in Women's History Month. And we're in the middle in this country of a pandemic that has swept this nation and has really affected everyone. There is no one who has not been affected with this pandemic. And so tonight's show is very special. It's just going to be able to hopefully offer some empowerment and some insight and give people space, which is what I'm really hoping for. The caller number is 323-870-3891. That's 323-870-3891. I'm Denise Bowles. I'm your producer and host. It's been my pleasure for the past 10 years to have this podcast going and working and moving in its very own unique way. So I'm really, really grateful. Tonight is a wonderful, wonderful guest who she and I have been friends for a while now. And we started out being friends. She was looking for doulas to fill out a survey that she was doing some research on for some of her work. And I agreed to fill it out, and we talked, and we hit it off, and we've been friends ever since. And it's just such a blessing. And believe it or not, just two weeks ago, I was a guest on her radio show, and we had a wonderful conversation. And not even realizing that 2 weeks later, she and I would be speaking once again together, but now we're both in the middle of a pandemic. And it's just absolutely amazing how life turns. So tonight I would like to have everyone please join me in welcoming Dr. Pierre-Louis. She is a licensed clinical psychologist here in New York with over 12 years of clinical work. She completed her master's in education and human services at Lehigh University in Pennsylvania, and her clinical psychologist work at the American School of Professional Psychology at Argosy University in Orange County, California. She has done so much work when it comes to working with adolescents, adults, geriatrics, PTSD, relationships, anxiety, suicidal ideation, substance abuse, infertility, grief, cancer, and perinatal mood disorders. She's also the founder of Embrace Therapy, which specializes in maternal mental health and general psychotherapy for all members of the family. Through Embrace Therapy, she has developed workshops to educate providers, which includes nurse practitioners, nurses, OBGYNs, primary care physicians, and doulas about the perinatal mood disorders and the impact of secondary trauma stress on professional caregivers. Now, what I love about her also is she is a self-published author. She has a workbook that's entitled Doula Revolution, Transforming Your Mind, Body, and Spirit. She has completed independent research on the strong Black woman, and she has a radio show that I was just on 2 weeks ago in Warwick, New York, and she's an amazing mother of two beautiful girls and a wife, and her husband is a lot of fun, too. He chipped in on our radio show last week. It was just really sweet. And I'm just so proud to call her a friend. Dr. Pierre-Louis, thank you so much for joining me on the show tonight.
Thank you so much, Denise, Bold Doula, for inviting me. thank you for taking me back to how far and how long we've connected and known each other. It's a pleasure. Every meeting, every conversation is such a gift. And so I thank you for just the addition that you've had in our passing and my life and professionally. And I cannot even recall. Thank you for reminding me when we initially connected. And I don't know. We just keep. Yeah, I think I completely forgot. So thank you for just bringing all of that to the forefront of my memory. It is a pleasure.
Yeah.
This actually is my second time being on your blog. Vlog radio show, so I'm really excited to be here. We are in a place where unprecedented, so we really don't know what has happened before, and this is different from all of us, and all of us are trying to manage the best way we can, and I don't know, it's just really overwhelming as a human being, as a mom, as a provider, And I live upstate New York, and I know you're in the heart of things in the city.
Yes, I am. And I just want to let our listeners know that there's an event page here on Facebook that if you would like to comment, questions, chat, anything that you'd like to share, you're more than welcome to join in on the event page on Facebook that has the exact same name as the show tonight, Birth While Black Case Study, Mental Health of Doulas in the Pandemic 2020. I'm here in the epicenter. I'm right here in New York, and not even a week ago, I was supposed to be on a plane going to Atlanta for a conference, and I called the president and founder of National Black Doulas Association, and I said, something is going on here. I can't put my finger on it, but there's some type of illnesses going on here, and there are, you know, I'm getting emails about flights being canceled and that if I want to change my flights. And the information really didn't come down a lot. We had to extrapolate. We had to speculate. We had to do a lot of work to get information because our government did not give us the proper information. So at first, a lot of people thought that we were, especially for me, people were like, well, what are you talking about? There was a lot of skepticism. And
That's
then
right.
All of a sudden, it really did open up. And birth workers, tonight I want to talk this out with you, Dr. Pierre-Louis, because you work very closely with doulas. You yourself had a doula at the birth of your children. You understand the concept and the work that doulas do, and I do appreciate that. So here we are. Doulas are committed to their client. They have an accord, an agreement that, you know, I'm going to support you at your birth, whether it be a community doula or private pay. That commitment has been skewed now. And Dr. Pierre, these doulas are very upset. They feel many things. And can we talk about what you think this might be as far as the start of this?
Well, as you indicated, there's a lot of information that came down very slowly in terms of us and how it has impacted the you and me's of the world, right? You know, the people who are impacted. And so you're right, the government has not been effective in providing the information. I think even for us, as we're receiving the information, many of us were unsure what this really meant. And just the lack of clarity from our government is just very shameful in terms of just the delay in response and directives. But specifically for me, as a woman who's been experienced the birthing experience, having a doula next to me, I understand the need for it. It is a necessity to have a doula near you if that is a choice that you choose to have. And for doulas to have had a contract and understanding with their clients, and now that opportunity is being robbed from them because there are so many delays in information and opportunities for protective masks and guards to be given and available. It just now is disrupting your ability to be able to provide, and it is extremely unfortunate. And how do you get back into a place of, because it really has caused such a disruption and equilibrium in what you are able to provide, but also too for the families. And so I can't even imagine just the impact and what does your psyche, the psyche of your clients, how do you maintain a relationship? What does that do financially? And so there's all layers of complex experience. It's overwhelming. I mean, I don't know what your experiences are and if you've spoken to any of your colleagues, what have they been saying?
Well, I'll tell you, Dr. Pierre-Louis, right now, a lot of my peers are triggered. They feel that they are abandoning their clients at this point because they're not allowed to do what they initially were trained to do, and that is the physical support of being a birth doula, to have that presence, to have that touch, to have that contact. So many of them are actually going through their own personal triggers, whether they're the most experienced, some of the most elder doulas, they feel something right now with this inability to go into the hospitals with their clients who are in labor. They're feeling it. They're feeling some type of feeling.
Of course, because to have that level of abandonment. And what do you say to your clients? I'm sorry, I can't. And how do you manage that? How do they process that? You know, the impact is very complex because there's various ways in terms of the lens to look at this, the lens of the parents who are seeing and desiring to have their doula next to them, preparing for that, and the lens of the doulas themselves and what that looks like, and also to the lens of the hospital, right, and their limitations. So everyone is really being impacted on all levels. So I really don't know the answer in terms of how they're feeling or how they should feel. I do believe, though, it is a grief process. This is a major loss, a loss in terms of your ability to be able to provide, loss financially, connecting with people whom you've had relationships with for a few months and now planning to be there for them. So this is a grief on a mass scale for everyone involved in terms of the lens that we could look at, the doulas themselves, the parents themselves, the attendant parents themselves, and also to the hospital. Because I know, again, firsthand, and even our conversation we had just a few weeks ago, that how much you help and aid and allow process and ease for the birth experience. And after you've left or you're done with a birth, doctors, nurses, parents are saying like, wow, we wouldn't be able to have done this without you and the support. And they're in awe of what you've been able to do. So there's loss on all levels.
There is, there is. And unfortunately, with the doula profession being what it is a very precarious relationship when it comes to the doula and the hospital, the hospital entity. Some doulas have a very good rapport with the L&D staff at the specific hospitals in their communities. And then there are other doulas who just don't. They just don't feel welcome. They don't feel valued. I know, you know, there's a hospital in New Jersey where, you know, they gave a party when the doulas were told that they could not come in because there's just that much ambivalence. Yeah, there's just that much ambivalence where doulas are coming in and trying to do this work and do this practice, and it is not well received. So to be not classified as an essential worker, which is how this all started, listeners, that at first the hospital said, well, only essential workers can come in. And then there was pushback with that, and some doulas, we got together and sent out some letters and got people to say, oh, wait a minute. And then they changed it because they realized that, well, essential workers, we're still letting in our hospital staff, and really phlebotomists are not essential. Neither are med students, nurse students, and residents. So they had to get rid of them to a point and say, okay, now we only want those who are certified doulas. Well, now you put up another schism, another wall, another very sore spot in the doula community when it comes to, well, who's certified and who's not. And then finally, with enough transparency, that took a little while to come down, the hospitals finally said, well, we have several cases of moms coming into labor, and we tested them for COVID-19, and they tested positive, but they were asymptomatic, meaning they had no symptoms. And that's scary because now they've exposed the entire L&D floor. And the partners have been barred because if you're living with someone and you're testing positive, there's a chance that they're infected also. So now the partner, the spouse, the person that you live with, they're not allowed to come in and support the birth either. And doulas really felt, oh, my goodness, you know, maybe I can go in instead of the partner. But as you said earlier, Dr. Pierre-Louis, another lack of transparency is the hospitals don't have enough equipment, enough protective equipment to even spare to have that extra support person to wear those extra pair of gloves and masks and gowns or whatever else they may need. So this has turned into a whole domino effect.
Yeah, it has. And it just breaks my heart just to hear the breakdown because I was not aware. And thank you so much for sharing that in terms of – and I applaud you for being such a leader and an advocate to the profession And sadly, as you indicated, during this work week, this week is Doula Week, and this being Women's Month, and to experience this level of catastrophe and just inability to just do what we are here to do for each other, to be able to support each other, and as professionals and moms who've decided on their own to advocate for their birthing experience to have a doula, and now that has been taken away from them, and so it really is just heart-wrenching on all levels. And you know, there's not an answer in terms of how to move forward. I don't know if there are any doulas out there, and maybe they'd be willing to share their experience with us to just hear how they're managing, how are they making sense of this experience. So for you, Denise, like, how are you managing?
I've learned to understand, because at first I was, you know, very much so saying, you know, I'm going into the hospital. And then with the proper education, the proper information, the proper communication, I was able to understand that my ambivalence about, you know, oh my gosh, remote, virtual, oh my goodness, and resistance is actually the best thing that I can do, because my presence in the hospital could put someone at risk, whether it be the person that I'm in the elevator with, whether it be my own family here at home, whether it even be myself right now, because there's such, you know, a lack of information, and because right now the virus is so virulent, because it's in such the introductory stage here of just going of everything. So what happens is, you know, I think birth work, and I'm sure you know this all too well, birth work is on a lot of expectations. And, you know, expectation of, oh, you're 38, you're advanced maternal age, you're going to be a high risk. Oh, you're Black, oh, you're going to be this, we're going to treat you like this. Oh, I hired a doula. Well, I don't need to do childbirth then. I don't need to do these things because I have a doula. There's a lot of expectations that come in this profession. Dr. Pierre-Louis, when you are counseling or working with a client, how do you earmark expectations and get them to see where sometimes these expectations could actually be a hindrance more than a help?
Very much so, because I think many of us, we process through life and making decisions for our future, for tomorrow, or, you know, and being a planner is quite healthy in terms of trying to plan out your day, your next week, and of course, as one prepares themselves for the birthing experience of their child or children. And so it is extremely important, though, when I do address this, whether it is around, you know, expected birth experience or any other component in one's life, that we really try to manage our expectations, that we have realistic expectations based on the circumstances that are in front of us. And so that is, for me, extremely important, because when you have unrealistic expectations and now you maneuver or move through an experience that your expectations are not realistic, and so you are now putting yourself at risk or at the point where you will become extremely disappointed that what you had envisioned is not going to be. Most people are not able to grieve an unexpected experience in a healthy way. We sometimes grieve it in a very unhealthy way. And so that is a conversation that I have with a lot of people with regards to just planning ahead, adjusting, or maybe when they're coming in a circumstance that goes so well. I've had plenty of parents or moms who've coming in post-birth, and they've had a particular set of expectations, and part of their trauma comes in the trauma, that secondary trauma that a doula experiences, is because if that mom or, you know, have unrealistic expectations, what could happen, then unfortunately so many other carriers or variables may come to be, because birthing experience sometimes does not go the way we want it to go, that becomes traumatic and people don't know how to adjust. And so even not only with regards to parents and the plans of having babies and making those expectations, but even today right now, doula workers or professionals were not intending or expecting this big pause that their names were not identified as essential workers. And so part of the grieving experience for them is to really identify, how do I then pivot my expectations based on what the information that has been given to me? Yes, the lack of transparency makes it quite challenging, and really finding a way for you to readjust your lens to then adjust to what's in front of you. And I appreciate for you to say this, Denise, that maybe now you're beginning to pivot, right, as you're now adjusting and changing your expectations a little bit, that providing virtual support and not the way you have always been trained and desired to do, which is physically being there for them. The other way is to be able to provide that virtual support and be open-minded that, well, if I can't do this, what else can I do to be able to provide? And I assure you that anyone who had plans of having Denise in their room with them through their birthing experience would very much appreciate a virtual presence versus not having at all. So expectations, we do need to adjust them. We need to find a way to pivot. And if you don't, the grief experience will be much more difficult to manage.
Thank you, Dr. Pierre-Louis. Thank you for your kind words also. Dr. Pierre-Louis, what has happened or what is your experience? Because part of your profession is to work with maternal health and work with women who are either prenatal or postpartum in their birth journey. What's this whole button about anxiety? Why does America, why does the United States keep women in such a state of anxiety when it comes to pregnancy and childbirth?
I think it's likely to the lack of information, right? I think one of the conversations you and I have had privately is just really that the birthing experience is not envisioned the way it was initially meant to be, which is that our bodies as women, that we are made to do this. This is what we were made to do, to be able to give life. And anxiety generally, I have to tell you, is really the highest mental health symptom, right? And it's a symptom, right? Because most people want to maybe categorize it into a diagnosis or disorder. There are people very much have anxiety disorders. And then there's most of us that really are identified through the lens of symptoms, that we just have symptoms, but not enough symptoms to meet a diagnosis. But I have to tell you, I believe it's about 18%. And I can't remember generally, maybe about 20 million of us in the United States have been diagnosed or have anxiety symptoms. So this is generally across the board that most of us have that. And the likelihood would be a lot more, especially right now, this moment. So we're talking about birth professionals, birth workers now having to pivot and adjust, having to adjust their expectations, having to maybe link it through the lens of, well, maybe I need to provide tele support versus the physical support that they need. It is naturally going to cause some form of anxiety for us, because now we're moving ahead into circumstances we weren't anticipating. You weren't aware, we weren't prepared for any of this. But ultimately, though, with regard to anxiety, it is just part of the conversation. And the anxiety is coming from lack of information. The anxiety sometimes may come very much from unrealistic expectations. The anxiety is from having unhealthy experiences, or maybe some other people's stories that you're reliving, thinking that their narrative could be your narrative. I mean, anxiety right now is just very high in this moment, but also it's very much a consistent part of our conversation in the perinatal birthing experience as a clinician. And if I may add, one of the ways for us to be able to manage our anxieties is, for sure, you want to be able to adjust those expectations, but also there's other things that I know that you probably practice, helping moms through their birthing experience and their breathing techniques, and really having a positive mental thought or self-talk in order to manage their anxieties as much as possible. I'm hoping I was able to answer the question.
Yes. Yes. And you know, that is so true, about the keeping the information, so intimidating and so almost unattainable. And, you know, from the time you go into the hospital, you are, you know, just subjected to all kinds of things that really, you know, could be better done in a different way. So, yes, I do interface, and I'm sure a lot of doulas do also, with a lot of clients who are having anxiety triggered by pregnancy and the impending birth that it brings. And, you know, that anxiety, I see it when I walk in to a birth and my client, you know, the husband called, Denise, you know, you got to come. She's really, you know, moving forward. And I get there, and as soon as I walk through the door, I see my mom's shoulders just drop where she sees me,
yeah.
And she just goes into a relaxed mode because she knows I'm there. Yeah.
That was my experience. That was my experience, and that's why I'm a believer in having a doula as a necessity. Just what you just identified, I experienced that on the other side. And I'm smiling with a big smile on my face because I know what that means, having a Denise Bowles walking into a room. Like, yeah, so there's a lot of anxiety, and you and the rest of the other birth workers and your colleagues do dismiss that and minimize that quite a big deal because it's like, wow, I have somebody who's on my side.
Yeah, and it's really very vital because, you know, I understand why doulas are upset. And I've processed it in my own way by saying, okay, first, let's contain this thing so we can get people to listen to doulas and listen to what we have to say, because right now everyone is really focused on of course, the spread. So I really think it's important that we talk about the importance of having that type of support, because many families don't have the external support. You know, I just was on another call, and they're saying, oh, we should go back to the old ways where we had our grannies and our aunties supporting and helping those births. We can't do that. I'm going to say it. We can't do that. We don't have that value any longer because for many of us, our relatives, our extended relatives are no longer here. We just don't have it. A lot of us don't have it. They moved away. They've passed away. They've transitioned. Or we had to move to another state in order for work purposes. So we had to move away from those family supports. So it's not that simple anymore. And it's just so in tune with the fact that I saw on social media that we can no longer raise our children into what we did because what we did no longer exists. And it's true. Those things back there no longer exist.
The idea of going back to anything, I think, you know, we're moving forward. The world's moving. The world is turning. And it's important to just be clear about how do you then adjust and pivot. Hold on to certain values. There are values that do have to adjust based on what's in front of you or maybe reevaluation or whatever it is. But the idea of going back to how things were, that doesn't mean the demands of what's happening now. What does that look like if one was to go back? I just think we need to understand our history and understand the impact and learn the lessons. And then through the lens of being able to move forward, just really, how do you do that while holding on to what works and letting go to what didn't work?
Very good. Yeah, that's good. That's great. That's great, Dr. Pierre-Louis. Because I do believe in one of the factors that we still do have that I think is very important, and that is holistic medicine. That is using plant therapy. That is using more of a natural approach in our diet and in our medicine cabinet. So I think that is the one thing that still is constant. And even with that, there's some plants that are a little bit more harder to find and a little bit more challenging to grow in this environment, like you said, as the world keeps moving forward. But Dr. Pierre-Louis, here's what I've learned. How do we not become so reactive and be more responsive? Now, I'm sure you see a lot of that in your therapeutic sessions with your clients, where people are more of a knee-jerk reacting than responding.
Yes, I agree. People are extremely reactive instead of being proactive. I think when we talk about how, you know, when I interact with my clinicians or I'm even doing an interview, I often ask the clinician, you know, what is your theory as to why people finally come across and sit across from you to get therapy? And one of the things I'm really looking for is for people to identify like that family nurturing experience in terms of what we are taught implicitly, explicitly by our family members, what's around us. I do believe that a lot of people lack the coping skills to be able to think through and having some awareness of what is happening for us or in their own lives around their emotions. And that is one particular skill that by the time one is done, a group or a couple or individual person is done working with me, that they have the ability to have some the emotional intelligence around awareness of what's happening for them. So in order for that to happen, one has to be able to try to be in tune with themselves as much as possible in asking those questions. One, how did I get here? If you find yourself in a place where you feel stuck. But on a day-to-day basis, to be able to ask yourself, how am I feeling? What's going on? And really those check-ins a couple times a day. As you wake up in the morning, before you get out of bed, you want to be able to really connect with what's going on with you and your psyche. And be able, before you move forward and get out of bed, you want to be able to do a check-in. What's going on with me right now? Where's my mood? What are the thoughts that I'm having? And, of course, be intentional, making plans for the day and my goals, realistic goals that you want to set. So I think when people are able to really slow down the reel a little bit in their lives, they're able to just really be intentional and be in tune to themselves during the day as things are moving forward. Emotions are going to evoke and managing those emotions to prevent those knee-jerk reactions that are normally very unhealthy and will cause us a lot of difficulties later in life. But most of the time we move the way our parents move, and we learn implicitly, explicitly. And so, again, going back, right, that's what mom and dad taught you, but that doesn't mean that's how it should continue to be. And it, all of us are responsible to do our work on an individual basis to then prepare our kids or whomever is around us, right, to prepare them to be able to be a more effective human being. So we all have to be responsible. We all have to try to be in tune with our emotions. And while it may be very overwhelming at times, but part of the reason why the emotions can become overwhelming that causes that knee-jerk reaction is because you weren't managing it at a small level. Emotions have a variance in how they move from light to medium to high. And when we are ignoring the light, it's like a little kind of like jerking. It's kind of like a little gnawing into our hearts and our minds. And once we ignore that, it will continue to manifest. It's going to continue to do that. And so then you go to the medium. Now it becomes a little overwhelming. But because we don't have the skills to manage our emotions, we try to kind of push it under the rug. And then after that, it gets to the extreme. And that's where that knee-jerk reaction is. And people become paralyzed sometimes.
Okay. That's very helpful. Dr. Pierre-Louis, there's another concept that's spinning out of all of this, and that is where these tons of webinars and teleconference calls, and a lot of doulas of color especially, and you are a woman of color also, but a lot of doulas of color, a lot of doulas of color are feeling that this is turning into a white saviorism type of movement where, you know, we have to help these women, and where's the empowerment for the women themselves to say, okay, this is a temporary situation, we're going to get through it, and then we're going to turn around and change some damn things, you know, in policy, you know, and get some things changed about it. So where does this come from where, you know, this saviorism thing, is it low self-esteem? Where does this white saviorism come from?
Well, it's interesting. I've never even heard of the concept, so that's something I might definitely for sure look up. I think with that concept, though, if I could move forward with the perspective that you just identified, I think people are taught that they themselves are very much people have taught in terms of race, just the race conversation, that lighter skin is better than the other. And so I think people just really, in terms of their ego, they're being fed that they know it all and can do it all. So there's that at play. And I think, I don't know in terms of how specifically the webinars and who's practicing and what the language that they're saying, trying to save other people to webinars. But I know for me, on a practical level as a clinician, I and the rest of the clinicians in our practice, they are offering telehealth. And I know a lot of psychiatry and medicine and pediatricians, they're providing telemedicine. And there's various people who are behind those screens, and I am one of them in providing that. And so you really have to identify what is your intention in providing these webinars. What is your intention in providing telehealth? You know, are you continuing to provide the support through the lens of your profession? Or are you now trying to step outside of your box and trying to have that savior mentality, or maybe this is an opportunity to be seen? Are you taking advantage where people are really vulnerable? It really speaks to the human condition and what really motivates us. My sister-in-law, she is a masseuse in Canada, and she was so frustrated. She said a fellow masseuse of hers, which I could imagine who he is, and he is saying that he's going to massage someone via telehealth medicine. I don't know through what lens, and we'll teach breathing exercises. And, you know, I don't know to what scope he's identifying, because I don't know much in terms of the profession, if that is something. And I imagine all of us, how we do overlap. I have to say that we do overlap, because I think you could very much be a therapist in your role as a doula profession, right? Because you're seeing, you're observing, you're providing, you're validating, you're supporting.
True.
But there are people, though, I think, who are really trying to take advantage. They're taking advantage because of the desperation. They're taking advantage because of who they are. And so we really have to check ourselves and what we are offering to the masses. The masses are vulnerable, and so we want to make sure that we are within the mindset and what our professions are, that we don't step outside of that, because in desiring to be able to get paid or providing or maybe show yourself to be a savior, you may then be impacting and hurting other people. And this moment and this time is when we need to get together the most. This whole pandemic is a cause for pause in terms of their spirituality. What is their motivation? What is their purpose for the work that they're doing? And we all need to really do some self-reflection as to why you're behaving the way you're behaving. What message are you sending out there? People are on social media. They're like causing others to be panicked and sending certain messages, and they just have to be responsible and really know that we are now each other's keepers, and we are here to be responsible and support each other and not cause further harm. Sorry,
yeah,
so
no,
boxed.
No, that's fine. This is wonderful. That's wonderful. Now, it sounds to me like you're talking about boundaries. How often in your practice are you encountering the issues around boundaries? Because that's big here.
Generally on a personal level or on a professional level?
On a professional level.
When
boundaries, people are coming in.
Go ahead.
No, but just the people, when people are coming in, you know, for their sessions, and he's like, oh, you know, that's a boundary issue. I mean, I find that very dominant here in the birth worker field about boundaries.
Again, right, people, in terms of, you talked about that ego stuff, right? You know, is it really lack of education? Is it that I am not clear about what my box is in my profession, and now I'm stepping over others? People can be very sensitive, and I think it's really a lot of the ego stuff. How when people are causing or breaking someone's boundaries, what needs are being met by that, right? And for some people, they may very much want to feel better by stepping over someone else, or maybe dismissing someone else's profession and kind of being a little haughty and putting themselves above others. And then there are people who may feel that it's just they are not going to be boxed in, and so they're going to step outside of their box. Generally, I mean, I don't know specifically what your circumstances around boundaries Is it with regards to the nurses and doctors? Is it with regards to other doula
professionals? It's in regards to other doulas. It's in regards to other doulas. And, you know, the fact that doulas want to provide the support. And meanwhile, this pandemic is a highly clinical entity. It just goes so far beyond the scope of doulas that, you know, we're in a pandemic. People are dying at this point. And there are doulas who are still fighting and insisting on, you know, writing letters and, you know, in the middle of all of this. And it's like, I guess it's probably basically what you answered before about, you know, the reactive knee jerk thing that it's, you know, not really helping. So, you know, with boundaries, I'm just concerned about how many times in your conversations with birth professionals does boundaries even come up?
Well, in regards to what you just identified, that people are just not, here's the fight that's in front of them, and to really understand when to pivot and reframe. You know, 2 weeks ago, should the fight be the same fight you're fighting now, knowing the numbers have like tripled, and that especially in New York City, it's a hotbed. The hospitals are not having enough, you know, face masks and really being out there, being in the hospital, put yourself at risk, your family's at risk, and other professionals at risk. It really just speaks to now to the ego and lack of education, lack of empathy, or just insight. I think, you know, it's interesting in terms of how we move and decisions that we make very much it speaks to our psyche and where we are in terms of our journey. And I speak to this. I really, truly believe as a clinician and to seeing people through the lens of empathy is that I really identify that every one of us is on our own, every one of us is on our own journey. And some people are a little bit moving forward in terms of their insight and reflection and growth. And other people, not so much. And so I don't know what we all could do in terms of masses, but if there are doula professionals out there and you know of a colleague that is still fighting the good fight, but their intentions may very be good, but this is a fight that they were fighting 2 weeks ago, but they have not adjusted or pivot, then I would say, you know, lovingly tap them and just say, you know, let's reflect back, let's pull back. How realistic is this fight? Is there another way you could provide support that is not going to impede your ability to now not cause more harm to the doula professional community? So, you know, people really have to be intentional. Things are changing, and to move forward from it at some point soon, and you will get back into the hospitals. And how are you engaging now, and how is that going to impact the profession, you know, months from now? So we really all have to just take a moment to pause. What are you doing? What's the point of it? Is this about your ego? Is it about moving the profession along? What is going on? And so really asking people to just reflect on that.
Okay. Love it. Love it. Now, that is a perfect segue, Dr. Pierre-Louis, into what I'm hearing from the doulas. A lot of them, so many of them are saying the same thing. And, of course, I'm saying it too. I'm thinking, how am I going to have this conversation with my client? April is right around the corner. How am I going to have this conversation with my client that we have to do this pivot and I won't be there physically? Is that part of the grieving? Is it transference? Many doulas are just sitting there looking at the phone like, okay, I'm looking at the news, I'm following this stuff. And now I have to go back to my client and have this very, very difficult conversation. And it's tough. What do you recommend as a therapist, as a counselor, as an empath? What do you recommend as far as how do we broach this?
Well, first, through the lens of being an empath and as a clinician, you and I, in this conversation that we're having, is to really just be able to identify how and validate how difficult this moment right now are for birth workers. We're not talking about everybody here, so let's keep it specifically to this lens, how difficult it is because, you know, having met a handful of doulas, providing this level of support and profession and service, a lot of it comes from your passion, that you're passionate about this work, and to know that this pandemic is preventing you from being able to live out your passion. And so we really need to just pause, and like you said, for us to be able to grieve that, how difficult it is. Moving through that and processing that for your own self, I would encourage, do some journaling if need be. Have conversations with like-minded professionals as you are, and to really be able to rehash and vent and process together how difficult it is, and just experience that together. And once you're able to do that with regards to your emotions, it is going to bring down your anxiety. Naturally, it will. And when it brings down your anxiety, your cortisol level.
So you're saying that we should duel each other. We should duel each other.
Why not? What is the reason why you're having professionals if you're not able to support each other? So, yes, you do need to connect with each other and really allow yourself to be able to just vent this out. Really talk about it and invalidate each other, you know, and really help that. Because once you're the best thing about our human condition, our fitness in the community, is that if we're able to validate each other's emotions, that is the neosporin to any emotional injury. And you are now being paused on your passion to do the work that you have wanted to do, you felt like you were put in this earth to do. It is injurious. And so you do want to doula each other and provide that level of support. Once you're able to do that, your anxiety level will decrease, your cortisol level will decrease, and now your brain, in being able to come with coping mechanism, being able to identify this conversation that you need to have with your client, your brain will open up. Because if you are in a high-intensity experience emotion, your brain is blocking your ability to be able to come up with planning. The planning stage in terms of the prefrontal cortex gets very limited and paralyzed when we are now emotionally overwhelmed. So once you're able to have your anxiety come down a little bit, having that conversation is not going to be a brand new perspective for a mom who is maybe 8 months and going on to their ninth month, or maybe a person who is at the end of their second trimester or going to their third trimester. This is not going to be a brand new idea to them. So they're in some way going to be expecting it. Maybe they're already texting you, calling you. They're listening to the news as much as you are. They're listening, they're observing, they're watching the social media. Now it's really about that birth worker, doula professional to really be able to have a sit-down conversation. Here's what we had identified. Here are the things that I said I was going to do for you. I'm not going to be able to do that for you face-to-face, but, hands-on. But here's what I could do virtually for you. Can you get me on Zoom? Okay. Here's how we're going to do that. Can you get me on FaceTime? Here's how we're going to do that. There are so many ways. If I'm helping another client who's at home, who may be getting ready to have an anxiety attack, or maybe their husband just had a conversation with them and they're really hurting, or maybe their mom is in the midst of dying, and I'm able to, in our conversation, not touching them, be able to provide for them and allow their emotions to calm down and give them a sense of peace and support them and really validate them, you very much could do that. So I want you to maybe open your mind a little bit, really think about you're able, like you said, Denise, is that you're now thinking outside of the box. Can I provide, what can I provide virtually that I am not going to be able to provide face-to-face? And I promise you that will make a world of difference. Because if they can't see your face, but they'll hear your voice. Maybe they will. Yeah. What am I talking about? They're all going to see your face. They're going to see that smile. They're going to hear that comfort tone. They're going to hear that quiet, confident tone that they're going to hear. And all the things that you've practiced with them, it's going to come all together. Yes, it's not the best experience that you had envisioned, but this is what you have. So work with it.
Right. Dr. Pierre-Louis, thank you so much for that. And there are doulas who are out here right now who are really experiencing some of these symptoms, and I want to describe them to you. Number one, the anxiety. Number two, they are on the defense. A lot of them feel stood up, like they're standing somebody up, like they're going against something that they really don't want to do. Many of them are saying that they cannot sleep. Their sleep pattern has been thrown off.
they're having, you know, difficulty focusing with their families. They feel like they're, you know, preparing for a disaster drill. And on top of all of this, there's this imposed self-quarantine that we all have to do. So how does all of this play on our minds, on our mental health, on our psychosis? How does all of this play on everything?
I mean, what you just identified is the evidence of how it is being played on someone's mind, right? The increase of anxiety, okay, and the inability to be able to sleep definitely are two major markers that we have to be intentional. If someone tells me that they're feeling depressed, I wouldn't be surprised. And I would say in some way I'm not surprised, and it is indicative of what's happening. If all of us come out with no depression, no anxiety, you know, we're able to be solid and strong and always at peace throughout this whole thing, I would say you are sleeping through this. So you are going to be impacted. I want to encourage you that while these symptoms are coming in, one of the things you want to be able to have in terms of self-talk, you'd be able to say, Denise, given the circumstances, it makes sense that you'd have difficulty sleeping. Of course you're worried about your finances. Of course you're worried about this relationship you had with Becky, and you knew that you were going to provide for her, or Jasmine, you said you were going to provide for her, but now you're not going to anymore, and really help you to be able to now have that self-talk and say, while you are very much disappointed that you feel the words, and I wouldn't even use this word abandon, but some people may use it, feeling like they're standing someone up or they're abandoning them, understand that you are not abandoning them. The circumstances is causing that to happen. So you really have to shift and reframe your perspective in terms of what is the type of self-talk we're having with ourselves? What are we saying? How realistic is that true? You want to be able to validate that anxiety and just say, you know what? It makes sense I'm feeling anxious. It makes sense I'm feeling down and depressed. It makes sense I'm feeling a little stuck. You are, you know, isolated. You are not doing the passion work. The thing that used to fuel you, you're not getting fueled by it. So really just validating all these emotions. And now with that component of feeling like you're abandoning or standing someone up, I would say now challenge that thought. How true is that? Is Denise really doing that, or the circumstances causing that to happen? So you want to have a conversation with yourself. You want to be able to journal. Again, connect with another colleague who truly will be able to understand and challenge. If the thoughts are irrational, they'll be able to say, beloved, how true is that for you? Let's look realistically. Let's have maybe a bigger, wider perspective. Is that really true of you, Denise? For the many years that you've been doing this, have you decided on your own accord to stand a client up? Have you decided on your own accord to just not show up because you were tired? No, you've had four or five births back to back. So this is not an indication of who you are and your integrity as a profession. And really reframe your perspective and really look at that.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Dr. Pierre-Louis, what are some of the things that we can do under these self-quarantine times that we're in, where we have to be, you know, 6 feet apart, we have to be off the streets, we can no longer spontaneously go outside and sit at a cafe and have a cup of coffee, or go to our favorite movie theater, or go bowling with friends, or go to the bar on Friday, TGIF. What impact does that have on us mentally, that, you know, all of these things now have kind of been taken away?
And this is the grief I was referring to, right? Just being able to just validate that grief is happening. You're quite limited around that. But this is where it is. Once we're able to manage our grief and just validate our emotions, you will just see, I mean, the mind is such a powerful thing. There are so many things that we still could do. I know all of us in the world, because this is cause for pause. So if you're able to accept you're limited around your profession and limited in how you're going to be able to provide support, you're going to now see how many things that you could be able to accomplish. People could still go online classes. They could listen to a podcast.
They could go.
Right now, it's sunny outside. If you're able to go out, especially up where I am, where it's woodsy, you could just get out of your house, lay in the sun, you know, and then get on the phone calls. or do FaceTime with your friend and tell them to meet me outside. And you two are, you're laughing about just the funny about just being outside in the sun but not next to each other. You do get your cup of coffee. Your friend gets another cup of coffee, and you're out there talking to each other and connecting that way. I understand why people are so limited around the ability to be able to use FaceTime, Zoom, Skype, and any other experience. It's because they haven't done it before, not as much at least. But for me, I've been providing telehealth way before all of this happens. I have clients who live in Albany, and I connect with them as if they were next to me. I used to live in California, and I talked to my mom and my dad every day, and it felt like I didn't miss a beat. I know that we are grieving doesn't mean that we can still connect, that we cannot prevent intimacy. If you have a child, my kids are calling my mom all the time now. If your child wants to speak to their grandmother, get on. Tell these old folks how to get onto this thing. And the kid, I heard a colleague and her client said that a child was playing with their dolls and grandma was just watching. And grandma would go back and forth and say, and so they're able to have playtime with grandma through FaceTime or Zoom or Skype.
Right.
And the grandma's just there a whole hour. Occupy the child, you still connected. It's not the same. But plenty of relationships have been able to survive where people have experienced long distance. We are just limited for a couple months. I want us to be able to grieve it, validate it, and get out of our small mindset and open our minds to know that there's so much more that can be done. Take a class, listen to a podcast, connect with your family and friends, email, send a recipe, connect with your partners, get a picnic outside, let the kids go to bed and picnic with wine and, you know, and cheese, whatever it is that you could find in your house. And connect with your partner, watch a good movie, and there's so many things that watch a foreign film, learn a new language, do Duolingo. There's so many things that we have not been able to do because we're ripping and running all the time. And there are gifts. Ultimately, I want us to reframe that while people are definitely losing their jobs, and I don't want to minimize that, while we're not able to be fed by our passion the way we were meant to do the work. But there are so many gifts that if we're so focused on the darkness and so focused on not being able to pivot, we will lose it. And if you are in a dark tunnel, you focus on that little piece of light that you see in that dark tunnel. The more you focus on that dark tunnel, that light, the bigger the light becomes.
Oh, thank you. That's wonderful.
You're welcome.
That is so good. So, so good.
Yeah.
We have a couple of callers here in the queue before we wrap it up, Dr. Pierre-Louis. I'm going to open up the microphones to these few callers. Thank you for joining us. The microphones are unmuted. Does anyone have a question or comment for Dr. Pierre-Louis before we end the show? Anyone? Anyone have any questions? Any comments? Okay. Everyone is just listening? Okay. Understood.
We may have some shy listeners out there.
Yeah, everyone is listening, no problem. So, Dr. Pierre-Louis, before we go, what do you see happening as far as I in the next 6 months? Do you see where we've done such a pivot where it has impacted the way we communicate, the way we live, the way we get care? Do you see this now being the introduction to a new pivot?
Yeah, I do, and it is my prayer that so many of the wonderful component about just human ability to connect physically will not be lost. And I fear that greatly. I think relationships are fueled by our ability to be able to connect. Yes, we are limited, so we could find a way to still connect virtually. But I fear that there will be more online classes and less brick and mortar schools. There's conversations that the kids who are in elementary, high school, and grade schools will probably finish out the year without being able to have their pizza parties at the end of the school year, whatever it is. I just fear that we are now embarking on a new way of living. And outside of the gifts that we could now take on a lot of people are experiencing being powered down with their family members and really connecting, and they could find a way to just do that again and continue that, because that's something that was positive. But I just fear that there's so many parts in terms of the way we practice that will be removed. So it is my prayer that the good things that will remain and the things that were inconvenient or maybe preventing us from being able to be our best selves can be removed. But ultimately, there's a lot of things we may not have control over, but we can have control over our mindsets and what we do in our own immediate families and our communities. I can't foretell. I have no clue what it would be, but I know that a lot of things won't be the same.
Yes, yes.
And that saddens
me,
because it's not for a few months. We're talking about, yeah.
Oh,
but
right,
we do have to
grieve
again.
That change is going
to
be permanent. Yes, that's right. That change is definitely going to be permanent. Absolutely. Yeah, we're not going to be able to revert back to any of that stuff. Before you go, any words of wisdom for doulas who are out here on this pivot journey that you so eloquently described? Any words of wisdom for us doulas out here?
I guess my words of wisdom is just grow. Try to stay unstuck. Connect with your other professionals. You're not isolated. You're not alone. Other birth professionals and doula professionals understand your plight right now, and connect with them. See the gifts of today, and as you're now, we talk about not repeating the things of the past. So now the world is moving forward, and there's new ways and new directives that may be given now based on what just happened. So how do you compete with that? How do you then transform in your own work that you're able to continue to provide and maintain the values that worked and let go of the values that don't work? Really just to really take a moment to really fully assess this moment, your future, be intentional, do your work, read those books that you've been meaning to read for growth, and really just do the best that you can and keep checking with yourself. Ask yourself, how am I feeling today? What's my purpose? Am I fulfilling my purpose? Can I be better than I was yesterday? And really do that internal work that most of us do not do because we're so busy ripping and running. But now you have the opportunity to do that. So I encourage all of us to be able to do that.
Yeah. Dr. Pierre-Louis, thank you so much for those kind words, and thank you so much for your support. This has been a very good show. I feel comforted just with this conversation. I do feel that this is a time of pivot for doulas, and that we do have to go through the grieving process and say that we're upset and say that we're hurt,
yes,
and that we're disappointed. And it's okay to say that, that we don't have to put on the brave face and suck it up all the time. I'm here at home, and yes, I'm journaling when I can, and I'm praying, and I'm cleaning and purging out things, and writing down goals, and listening to audiobooks and producing podcasts. I'm doing things, and I'm still interacting with my clients by phone and social media. And thank God for smartphones. You know, if we were trying to do this in the 70s, just imagine if we didn't have the technology to do all of this. So I'm really, really grateful that I feel hopeful that if we adhere to the guidelines, that we can get this virus under control and get the hospitals safe, to be a safe place for everyone again. And we have to stay positive. So you're right. I do the daily check-ins, Dr. Pierre-Louis. I really do. I do
those.
Good
for you.
Check-ins.
And
oh,
you know what?
Gosh.
You don't have to tell me that. I would have already noticed. I think the people who are doing their work, there's an energy about them. And those who are struggling, you could feel the heaviness. So we all have to be responsible.
Yeah, yeah. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. Could you tell the listeners before you go about Embrace Therapy and how they can reach you if they would like to connect with you after this podcast?
Okay, cool. If you would like to reach me, my website is iembracetherapy.com, www.iembracetherapy.com. You can email me info@iembracetherapy.com. So you'll should get all the information you need from the website, and I look forward to hearing to speak to any one of you guys.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Dr. Pierre-Louis. It's been a blessing as always. And don't be a stranger, so you can come back on the show
virtual
in the next couple
hug.
Of months and see what's going on. Yeah, right. We'll see how things are going, definitely. So thank you once again. I really do appreciate you and our friendship. Thanks again.
All right. God bless. Bye-bye.
God bless. All right, listeners, thank you so much for joining in on the call. It was just absolutely wonderful. We had a great time here, some really good insight on what we can do. It's tough here for doulas. We are on the front line, and we get to know our families and know our clients and our communities. And it's very difficult to be told all of a sudden that you have to step away and you can't be there. And we do have concern. You know, with the health system here in this country, it is not unwarranted, this concern that we have. And it's to be respected and it's to be valued. And I do still believe that doulas bring a very high value to the birth experience, to the institutions that they go and do support in. And we are essential. And I do believe that after all of this is done, after this coronavirus is under control and people are able to listen, I think it's time to go back to the table and do some serious policy changes. Everything from doulas to having a certified professional midwives as well as nurse midwives, and have more resources here, more options for women, so that if another crisis were to come, we are better equipped to navigate through it. I think that's the important factor here. I'm Denise Bowles, and I'm really proud to be a doula. Happy World Doula Week to so many of my beloved, dear friends who are doulas. It's a pleasure to work right alongside of you. It's a pleasure to share every birth victory with every one of you. And I am praying, and I am staying so positive for all of you that we all have to have this hard conversation with our clients in the next coming weeks and months. But be positive. Offer other resources. And don't give up. This is a test. Don't give up. Don't give up on your practice. Don't give up on your business. Hang on. Don't give up. And express that to your clients as well, that it's so important for them to see that there's another way that this can happen. There's another way to stay connected. There's another way to be supported. And that you are there. Just show up. Just be present. And do the virtual work. It's still work. You're on call. You're there picking up the phone. And you're valued. You're important. You heard the call from a higher power and you responded. And you are worthy. You are special. You are wonderful. You are strong. You are capable. So thank you all so very, very much for listening to this podcast tonight. And I am so grateful to all of you for your support and your kindness. This was a short notice thing. But I was so grateful that Dr. Pierre-Louis didn't say anything but when. So I have another special guest coming up hopefully very soon based on the situation here at hand, another clinical professional, and I'm really looking forward to producing that show as well. I'm Denise Bowles. I'm known as Bold Doula. You can find me here in New York City. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Instagram. I'm on my webpage of www.bolddoula.com. Thank you also very, very much. I'm very, very proud to be a donor-certified birth doula. I also mentor doulas, and I do birth doula work, and I'm a CLC. I'm just really proud of all the gains and wonderful knowledge. As Dr. Pierre-Louis said, you know, I'm a hypnobirthing doula. I'm an evidence-based birth, childbirth instructor. Woo! I, you know, there's so much that I've accomplished, and I'm so grateful, and I know all of you can do it too. So take this time for what it is. It's a pivot. How well will you pivot? How well will you make the transition? This was a great show. There's a lot of good nuggets in here. You can listen for free 24/7, so please come back. It will be archived, and you can listen, and you can take notes and share and have great discussions, group discussions online with your peers. Thanks once again, and have a great night.